Hello, I'm Manx Radio's election producer, Amy Griffiths, and welcome to our House of Keys general election candidate interview series. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get the chance to decide who you want representing you in your constituency. We're offering all the candidates the chance to tell us about themselves and explain why they think they're the best person for the job. Today I'm talking to Paul Weatherall, who's seeking election for the second time in Eyre and Michael. Paul's chair of Liberal Vanin and stood unsuccessfully for the party in the constituency in 2021. So, Paul, I suppose my first question is, what made you want to stand again?
Sadly, it's because the same issues are coming up again in 2026 as they were in 2021. So the reasons I stood in 2021 are still there. I think the government has been indecisive, dithering over the last 5 years. There's a lot of things that they've talked about but not actually put into action. And I think, I hope I can help make a difference if I'm elected as an MHK for Eyre and Michael.
And since the last election, we will get into the nitty-gritty of some of those things over the course of this interview, but since the last election, you've become a Balaff Parish Commissioner. And has that given you a different perspective at all since the last time you stood?
Yes, I think so. It's given me an insight into some of the problems and issues facing people at a local level in rural area of Eyre and Michael. There's, planning issues and things like the recycling of goods from households, the Balladool civic amenity site, the problems there that have affected people throughout the north of the Isle of Man. So having first-hand experience of having to deal with some of those at the local level has helped confirm some of my views, but also helped me maybe trim some of them as well.
And I think that's the thing as well, isn't it? Because when you're standing for an election, yes, of course, you're wanting to represent your constituents at a national level, mm-hmm. but also ultimately you are there to represent on local issues too and to be that local voice.
Yes, I think, MHKs obviously have a role to play in liaising with the local authorities in their area. Some do it better than others. But I think, an MHK has to pay heed to the local issues that matter to people, the potholes that need filling, as well as things like food security and energy provision at a national level.
And how do you think the relationship is between government and local authority on the Isle of Man? And is that something, of course, the Local Authority Reform Bill is something that's been a contentious issue in the House of Keys for this administration. Where do you sit on that and how do you think that could be improved upon if it needs to be?
Yeah, I think one of the things at the last election, I remember Alf Cannon at a public meeting saying that local authority reform wasn't a priority for him. And I can understand that, but there's still issues connected with local authorities that I think do need resolving. There are lots of ways to deal with it. The actual final number of local authorities, I think most people would agree that we've got far too many, but no one's quite agreed on how many they should be reduced to and what their remit should be and how that should alter. So I think we need to have some sort of convention involving existing local authorities, the Department of Infrastructure that has a responsibility for local authorities at a national level, and virtually anyone who is interested in how local authorities should perform to come up with a solution that is acceptable to a wide number of people and then agree to implement it, because that's the problem. People have been talking about it for decades, really, but no one's prepared to implement a solution.
And do you think that's something that could be said potentially about this administration that we currently have, in that there seems to have been a lot of talk and not necessarily quite so much action?
Particularly on housing. Housing was a big issue at the last election in 2021, and it still is now. Affordable homes, both for purchase and rent, are in short supply. We need to build more houses, and government really hasn't done very much about it in the last 5 years, apart from talk about it. So one of my priorities and Liberal Van Inn's priorities for the next administration is to try and get Treasury to set aside an agreed sum of money. We're talking about 100 million over the 5-year period for local authorities and housing agency to put in bids to actually go ahead and build housing, knowing that the money is there allocated for them to do that.
And it's all well and good saying, oh yes, you know, we want to put, say, £100 million aside for this, but is throwing money at that, if we're going to talk about housing, is just throwing some money at it going to really be the solution here? Or does there need to be an actual strategy put in place? And if so, what would that strategy be for you?
Well, the strategies are in place. That's what we've been talking about. What we haven't been doing is building. So we need to build the houses. Yeah, the money is required in order to put out contracts for builders to actually build the properties. So, you know, we've got to get on and do that. Talking about it for another 5 years, I don't think is an option.
Mm. And within your manifesto, within Liberal Van Inn's manifesto, it talks about the fact that these houses need to be built and that for both rent and for purchase. Mm-hmm. When it comes to rent, the rental market is also something that's under increasing pressure here on the Isle of Man. These properties that are being built, who would they be rented by? Would they be private landlords? Would they be government rented? I mean, what do you sort of envision for that?
Well, the money that we're talking about allocating is for social housing, so rented through either the housing agency that's recently been established or through the local authorities that provide social housing, such as Douglas City Council, Ramsey, etc. So the 100 million that we're talking about would be there for those authorities to put in bids against. They already have plans in place for building additional social housing in their areas, but they haven't been allocated the money. So we'll be asking for Treasury to ensure that money is allocated at the beginning of the 5-year period to be spent over the 5 years and actually get houses built.
And of course, social housing is another big issue in terms of the housing markets, but it's not the only one.
No.
So how would you go about addressing, you know, first-time buyer properties has been mm-hmm. a big thing, and also for properties that need to be renovated and have full renovations, trying to get mortgages for them is historically challenging. Downsizing properties can also sometimes be a challenge. There's, like, you know, there's a lot of issues going on with the housing market. What would Liberal Van Inn do to try and combat some of the issues with the wider market? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we definitely want to see more affordable housing for people to purchase as well as to rent. And the first-time buyer scheme has been overhauled a number of times. It still could do with further tweaking to make it more accessible for people. And shouldn't be restricted to first-time buyers. There are people who need to move from properties in their older age. There are families that split up for a variety of reasons, people looking to get homes that perhaps needing assistance with getting mortgages because they're not the breadwinner in the family. So I think we need to open up the first-time buyer scheme. And also the biggest problem that I see is that when developers are asked to provide affordable housing on the schemes that they're building, they often those options are often not taken up by government for a variety of reasons, but mostly because they haven't got the money allocated to make use of the houses that developers are actually building. So we'd like to change that and have, I think, on most large developments, 20% of the housing has to be affordable and made available for first-time buyer schemes. We'd like to make sure that those options are always taken up.
And how would you try and enforce that and make that happen?
Well, I think government can just do it because they already have an agreement to do it in principle. It's just in practice they often waive their right to do it. So we'd say to government, particularly the Department of Infrastructure that administers the schemes, to not waive those rights.
So You said at the start of this interview that things haven't got any better, in your opinion, in the past 5 years. But what do you think that you would be able to do to change that?
As an individual MHK, each individual can't do a lot. We have to work in collaboration with other people. That's why I'm a member of a political party, although we're still not putting enough candidates up to form a government. Our basic principle is that we work in cooperation with others. So I'd be seeking, along with any other MHKs elected from other political parties, to discuss the policies that we have and come to a consensus as to a program for government. Unfortunately, the system that we have at the moment, with majority of MHKs being independents, the public, the voters, when they're voting in an election, have no idea what the program for government's going to be. The only way of changing that is to strengthen political parties, in my view.
But you admit that you, as Liberal Vanin, don't have enough members at the moment to be able to do that. No. So is realistically standing with a party the best option?
It's a catch-22. The only way you can gain support for political parties is by demonstrating the benefits. And the only way you can do that is by standing for election and asking voters to support you, which is what I'm doing.
And for this election, Liberal Vanin says that its priorities for the next administration focus on two themes. They are tackling the cost of living and getting the basics right. Mm-hmm. So if we start with the cost of living, I know we've touched a little bit on housing already, but why do you think that this is an issue on the Isle of Man? And what evidence do you have to say that there is an issue with the cost of living?
There's a cost of living issue across the UK in the British Isles, including the Isle of Man. Prices of food and agricultural commodities have gone up enormously with the, first of all, the Ukraine war, now the war with Iran. So, it's self-evident that people need support to help cope with this. There are a number of ways of doing it. We're not talking about raising taxes or giving benefits to people willy-nilly, but there are certain sectors that deserve support to help them through what was sometimes crisis situations. Farming community, particularly at the moment with fertilizer and feedstocks.
And the difficulty is as well, though, is that if there's a cost of living crisis for the people, then government is still experiencing that as well. And there's only a finite pot of money. So how do you think that government would be able to afford that extra support?
I think it's targeting it. It's, as I say, it's not giving people a blanket £500 for everybody on the island, for instance. Supportable in the long term, because by supporting the economy and individuals who are servicing the economy is the best way of benefiting the island and keeping our income levels going, and the taxes that we raise on top of that to provide public services. So, you know, it's a circular argument, isn't it? Because we only succeed as a society by keeping the productivity of the island high as possible and supporting those who are providing the supplies and services, the goods and services that we all depend on.
And within the Liberal Vanin manifesto, it talks about the wanting to see welfare reform. Mm-hmm. And what would that look like to you?
It's social care reform we're talking about in particular, and that is there's a consultation that's been held to help look towards improving the residential care that we provide on the island. There are a large number of people who find it really difficult to afford the residential care charges, and there are a number of ways of alleviating that. So that people don't have to sell their family home in order to help grandparents or even parents have the care in later life that they deserve. In Scotland, everyone in need of clinical care gets that for free, and it's an option that we would prefer to see happen on the island, so that everyone knows that in old age or at any time in their lives, if they're in need of care because of a clinical problem that they have, that like with the NHS, there aren't any costs involved in that. That we're not talking about accommodation costs for residential care homes or food and board and lodging. It's the clinical care that's provided, and that's really often the most expensive part of what happens in a care home. We also believe that a lot of people these days want to be cared for in their own homes for as long as possible. So we'd like to see an expansion of the care available on the island for people to enjoy that.
And that was something that was actually started by your party leader while he was in his capacity as health minister. Mm-hmm. And is that something that you feel like government has dropped the ball on in terms of not trying to push through quickly enough and try and find, like, take action on?
No, on that one, I wouldn't say they've dropped the ball and not pushed it quickly enough. The consultation returns have only recently come out. They're being considered in Tynwald, I think in the next few weeks. It's just before an election. Something as important as this has got to be phased in. It's not something that we can come to a quick decision on. So I think the next administration taking a line on it isn't something to be critical of the present administration for.
And if we return to sort of the context of the cost of living, one of the big aspects of that that's cited as almost a win-win in terms of helping save money on bills and also be better for the environment is the increase in the use of renewable energy on the island and pushing that forward. And where would you stand on those kind of policies?
I think when we're talking about the future of generating electricity for the island, whether we're talking about the future of how we heat our homes, it's got to be affordable. And that should be the first priority. We also have a duty internationally to support measures that are taken to help with global warming and to reduce our use of fossil fuels. But the main reason that Liberal Vanin feel that we should be moving to renewable energy to replace the gas-fired power station at Bull Rose is that it, in the long run, it'll be cheaper and it will also be good for the environment.
It does raise a rather heated debate on the Isle of Man at the moment about particularly wind energy and the current plans for an offshore wind farm and also an onshore wind farm. And where as a party do you stand on those plans?
Again, it's what's most cost effective and what works. A lot of people talk about why don't we have tidal energy? Why don't we have energy from the ground? These are all possibilities to different extents, but tidal energy at the moment is still in its infancy. It's mainly in research and development phase. It's certainly not as cost effective as wind energy or solar. So I think the only options that are available for the island at the moment to move to and that will be cheaper than continuing to burn gas are wind power and solar power. And the one that generates the most energy for the needs of the island is wind power. And where wind farms are situated, whether it's on the island or offshore, is up to planning considerations. And in terms of Moor Vanin, I haven't seen anything that persuades me that it's the best thing since sliced bread, but equally I haven't seen anything that persuades me that we should avoid it at all costs. So I'll be waiting for the investigator's report when it comes out to make a judgment.
And Cairvi?
And Cairvi, again, it's a planning application. It'll be considered as part of a planning application. I think we need onshore wind farms on the island. We don't know whether Moor Vanin will ever go ahead anyway, and if it does, it's at least 10 years away. We need to get wind energy up and running on the island fairly quickly. The Pullrose power station has only about 10 years of its life left before it needs a considerable amount of money reinvesting in it. And it's not cost effective to really do that and continue to burn gas. So we do need wind turbines erecting somewhere. And where those should be is down to, first of all, expert advice, and finally, planning considerations. And there may be mitigation measures that need to be put in place, and that will come out as part of the planning process.
And again, so Liberal Van is also hoping to attract inward investment, hoping to grow high-wage, high-skill and secure jobs. Mm-hmm. So how exactly are you hoping to do that?
I think by getting the island right. If we have good housing on the island, adequate housing, affordable housing on the island, if we have a reasonably good health service and good schools on the island, then people will be attracted to come here to live, but also people will be attracted to come here and invest, knowing that any employees that they need to bring to the island will want to come.
And well, the thing is, you know, times are tough for everyone and people are being far more prudent with their investments. So what does the Isle of Man need to do to really be able to attract that spending and to be able to keep it here?
I think we need to look at what's happening around the world, where the developments are that we can offer skills that we already have. And I think we've got good IT skills on the island. We've got a good finance sector on the island. Bringing those together to help with AI developments makes sense. How we progress that depends on the people that we attract in to help us do it. What I don't think is a good idea is for government to pull out of the hat a particular project or a particular area of that the island should progress with. I don't think government's very good at doing that, and not very good at maintaining finance for it. I think we have to allow the private sector to lead the way on it and support them when and where they need it.
Now, let's move on to Liberal Vanin's second core theme, which is getting the basics right. So what do you mean by that? And why do you think that this administration has been getting them wrong?
Mm-hmm. I think this administration hasn't so much been getting them wrong. It's just not been doing anything. So again, going back to housing, they've been discussing housing strategies, housing policies till the cows come home. But what we need now is to get on and build them. We've been discussing health and social care and how much Manx care or any health service needs on the island in terms of finance. We all know that health and social care costs money, is going to increasingly cost more money because people are living longer and usually living longer with poorer health conditions. So it's a no-brainer that we need to be prepared to invest more in health and social care. How we do that and who pays for it is something that we need to discuss as a society and put options before the electorate. Sadly, that's not going to happen at this election, but I think the next administration needs to be prepared to cost everything out, prepare options for people in terms of what they can expect from the health service on the island, and say, you know, if we're not prepared to spend more money on health, we're going to have to accept a poorer health service. I don't think anyone on the island wants that, but equally, people are very wary about increased taxes when government's not always that good at spending it.
Well, one of the things that Liberal Vanin has said in its manifesto is that it wants to upgrade the National Health Service into a National Health and Care Service. So what exactly is that? What does that mean?
That means what I was talking about earlier, really, that we have a pretty good health service on the island. Social care is a bit iffy and it's not so affordable for many people. So it's integrating the social care side more closely together so that the hospital service at Nobles and GP services are more aligned with the needs of residential care, and also that, as I said earlier, that people can get better care within their own homes. So it's been talking for a long time about integrating information about patient records between GPs and the hospital in particular. But I think it also needs to be integrated so that people who are in residential care, everyone has access to the records, and the need for people to be transferred in and out of residential care homes into hospital and out again, and bed blocking, which causes restrictions on how Nobles can be effective. We need to, as I say, bring all that together to provide a more efficient health and social care service.
And you claim in your manifesto that it will reduce waiting lists and provide joined-up support for people, but where's your evidence for that?
Well, I think the waiting lists, I think everyone agrees that the more liaison there can be between residential care and GPs and the hospital will make the need for people to go into hospital less frequent. That will only benefit the waiting lists. But at the end of the day, we need more staff.
And you said you weren't sure how much it was going to cost, or that it should be something that is decided by the next administration. But you must have an idea of the kind of extra investment that you think the health service needs to be able to function in a way that people want it to.
I think the health service, as it stands, it's needed at least another £20 to £30 million per year than has been provided under the last administration. I think this year they've recognised that in an election year and thrown a little bit more money at the health service. That needs to be written in stone so that it becomes part of the budget for future years. And one of the problems that we have with reports that we get, like the Michaels report that led to the establishment of Manx Care, is that governments tend to cherry pick those recommendations that they like or perhaps don't cost so much money. There are about 10 recommendations in the Michaels report still outstanding, so we'd like to see those reviewed, and where we feel that it's going to benefit the operation of the health service that they are brought in.
I'm going to have to cut you off there only because we are now down to the last minute. So now that we have a minute on the clock, I just want to ask you finally, what is the key message that you would like voters to know about you?
To know about me, that I want to see action, that I feel I can deliver it given the opportunity. The biggest issue, I think, with many people with government is its openness and transparency, and I'd like to see that improved substantially.
That was Paul Weatherall, who's standing for election in Erin Michael. Also standing in the constituency are Julia Bell, Stephen Broad, Alfred Cannon, Tim Johnston and Mary Phillips. This interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, will be available shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And don't forget, you can find out more about the general election on our dedicated website, which you can find at manxradio.com.